On this episode, we discuss Happy Halloween, Scooby-Doo.
That's right. It's our special annual Thanksgiving Halloween episode.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington, you Shocktober freaks.
Stuart, God. No, I think you're under a misapprehension of what time of the year it is.
Wait, what's the name of the movie we watched?
The name was Happy Halloween, Scooby-Doo. I'm Elliot Kalin. This is actually November, episode.
And joining us this time is podcaster, author, YouTuber, journalist,
woodworker,
voice actor,
number one Sheets customer, Justin McElroy.
What an honor. I am such a fan of you guys. You guys have got me through some real tough spells of mental health just turning through your shows. I can't believe I'm here. Can't believe I made it. Looks like I've really finally made it. Here I am.
Looks like you made it. Look how far you've come, my babe.
I like you pretending that you're not doing a favor for us.
None of that was a joke. I love this show.
Oh, okay.
No, this is a bit Dan does where he offends the guest immediately.
Mm-hmm. He's like, why do you like the show, idiot?
I'm not offended. It's a great...
Hey, Dickface, why do you like our show so much, stupid?
I know he likes the show. Yeah. It is very nice of him to come.
You can enjoy a favor. Like, if you help a friend move, but all their furniture is, like, really squishy and fun, you know what I mean? It's like, it turns out, like, oh, actually, I'm enjoying this. This isn't that heavy. Yeah. It's fun to play with.
That's usually what I ask my friends when I agree to help them move, is the squishiness of their furniture.
I have two questions. I say, one, is the furniture squishy? And two, is it like just soft or is it moist? Because I'd rather not carry the moist
and
stuff.
Edible, like in Willy Wonka's factory.
So my hands are going to be really sticky at the end of it. Oh, yes, Willy Wonka's friends must have hated so much when they had to help him move. And they're like, just use the Oompa Loompas. No. And he's like, they're not slaves. They work for me. Yeah. I can't just use them for my personal moving.
Yeah, and he's like, why are you moving out in August of all months?
candy furniture is going to melt in the truck. Why are you moving now?
Well, this does bring up a key problem with the factory, is that room that's all just candy must, you know, just attract a tremendous amount of lint, like small dead insects or live insects stuck to the candy.
Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't brace Charlie for it, and... Did you ever hear what happened to the man who got everything he ever wanted? What? For 6 months, he was really worked up about flies. 6 months of the year, it just flies, 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 flies. It is a big problem. You will not enjoy that time. Close it up, go to Aruba. You will not like that that time.
And he goes, Charlie, I know what you're thinking. You just package that candy with flies on it and call it Wonka Bar Bug-ums. It does not work. I tried it. Nobody wanted Bug-ums. The candy with real bugs attached to it. It just didn't work.
The Willy Wonka company missed a trick by not selling chocolate bars called Little Bit of Augustus. And there's just a little bit of Augustus gloop in every one. Just a little bit of particulate.
It's called gloopies. Yeah.
Gloopies.
I mean, you gotta believe that he's well marbled and delicious.
We're really showing our Western privilege in that we're making fun of the fact that people could be eating chocolate bars with insects or Augustus gloops in them, and I think that's pretty fucked up.
In many parts of the world, Augustus gloop is a primary source of protein, and I think we need to respect that.
Yeah.
Let me explain the premise of this show to anyone checking in for the first time and thinking, oh, my favorite is Justin. You'll be disappointed next time. But,
maybe.
This is a show.
This is a show
where we watch a bad movie and then talk about it. That's our MO. But Justin, who knows what he thinks of this movie? He picked it. Now, Justin, I wanted to ask before we got into talking about the movie, what was it about this film that made you want to talk about it with us?
Yeah, when I texted Justin, I was like, yeah, you can pick any movie in the world. And, like, even before I was done sending the text message, I got the response, Happy Halloween, Scooby-Doo.
Well, I was watching it at the time that you texted me. I was watching it at the time that you texted me. But But it was the third time I'd watched it with my children. And my rationale was this. One, I thought I'd try to do Elliot a solid and have a movie that he could watch with his children.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Secondly, and I hope that the logic of this has been borne out now that you guys have watched it. It wasn't just a sort of one-off, because I watched it again today. It's a bizarre flick.
It is very strange. Yeah.
Almost every choice in this movie is so strange. And it almost starts to feel like, you know, those that one very funny Twitter writer who was doing the AI, like an AI-generated script for an Olive Garden commercial. It feels like someone put every Scooby-Doo into a machine and then let the machine generate a script for a Scooby-Doo movie.
Yeah.
Like it was translated.
That's underselling it a bit, because I think it's also very it's surprisingly effective in what it attempts to do. But what it attempts to do is weirdly ambitious, I feel like, for a movie of this stripe. And like, you don't expect Happy Halloween Scooby-Doo to be a message movie, but it definitely, definitely is.
And there's a surprising amount of world building in this Happy Halloween Scooby-Doo movie.
And world borrowing? Just
yes, and we're crossover building. Now, damn.
And it's also kind of a Mad Max Fury Road, which you don't expect Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. Yeah, but I didn't expect Road Game Scooby-Doo, which it kind of becomes.
And speaking of world building, we are introduced right away to Crystal Cove.
Wait, Stuart, actually, I hate to interrupt. I just want to say it is fitting that we watched this Halloween movie in November.
Okay. Why?
In honor of Joe Ruby and Ken Spears, the creators of Scooby-Doo, who both died this year. Ken Spears just died about a week and a half ago. So it is in his honor that we are now going to, I guess, tear apart this movie that used his characters. He didn't write it, but you know.
Yeah,
but
Justin is making a face at the idea that
you guys tear it apart all you want. I'll be there picking up the pieces and carrying them on my shoulders back over to the wherever we're carrying it from.
When Happy Halloween Scooby Doo saw just one set of footprints, that was you carrying it.
Yeah. So the movie opens up in Crystal Cove, a town built on a large natural crystal deposit, as we'll learn later. It's Halloween. There's a Halloween parade, and Elvira is the is on the main float.
You make it 10 seconds in before you are to one of the wilder picks in the movie. Y'all, this is a children's movie.
Yeah.
None of them know who Elvira is. Not a single child will know who Elvira is. They're
bizarre.
Going to get as a Scooby-Doo character.
It's bizarre that when I was a kid, I knew who Elvira was, since her main thing was being like making death jokes and having boobs. And yet somehow this was a character I was aware of as a kid, but no kid now is going to know who Elvira, the Mistress of the
Night,
is.
And because this is a movie for children, they largely take away the boobs. So
just write that down in the notes.
Yeah, Dan's mad that they de-sexified Elvira and Bill Nye.
Well, that's what
Dan didn't think Elvira's boobs were big enough.
That's his big note to Warner's on this one. Warner's Animation. I have one general note. This is a world note, just for the whole movie. Yeah. Elvira's known for her cleavage, and yet I didn't see. And that within that note comes a secondary note in the scene where Daphne and Elvira switch clothes. We don't see that process taking place. That seems like a wasted opportunity for me, deviant art scholar Dan McCoy.
That's going to hurt our international box office for sure.
In your own words, Elliot, that is one of Elvira's main things that has been removed. I'm not saying it should be in the movie, but like even in her movie, which the name I forgot.
Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
Mistress of the Dark. The
How
end,
could Dan remember that name for the movie?
Yeah.
She wins over many of the townspeople by doing a burlesque routine where her boobs spin her tassels around. Like Elvira knows that is a key component to her whole thing. And it is just wild that she's in this movie.
It's wild.
Yeah, she's great. So she's the Grand Marshal, and she's on the main float. The Scooby-Doo gang, Mystery Incorporated is their name, are already undercover in costume, which is interesting for later, trying to, you know, they think there's going to be a monster attack, or they're trying to prove monsters aren't real. Just about then, the Bomb Me shop explodes, and a hobgoblin pumpkin-headed character comes flying out and starts throwing pumpkin bombs and stuff.
And I know what you're thinking. You're like, wait a minute. Is Scooby-Doo crossing over with Marvel Comics and their jack-o'-lantern villain?
Yeah.
No, wrong comics universe, friends, as you're about to find out.
Or, I mean, doesn't the Green Goblin throw pumpkin bombs?
Yeah, he doesn't have a jack-o'-lantern on his head. But jack-o'-lantern uses a lot of Green Goblin's old stuff. Green Goblin left a lot of his weapons all over New York because, one, he's a pack rat, and two, just in case, I guess he was in the Nabe and he needed to switch costumes. And so Hobgoblin, jack-o'-lantern, Demogoblin, they're all always borrowing Green Goblin's old stuff, you know.
Okay,
it's,
well.
It's Scarecrow.
Yeah, it's Scarecrow. Gotham City.
It's Scarecrow, and you watch that, and you think, when I first watched this, I thought, oh, this is a Batman crossover?
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
No. Yeah.
It's just Scarecrow.
Just Scarecrow. He's branching out. You know, he's like, oh, I don't just want to be a Batman guy. I want to be a little bit of everything.
90% of the time I'm watching the movie with Audrey, and 90% of the time she loses interest almost immediately. But she was on her edge of her seat for this one because she's a big Scooby-Doo fan from way back. Mm-hmm. She actually convinced me to watch Scoob a while back. But she said, oh, it's the Scarecrow. And I thought she was just joking for a while because I missed the fact that they're like, oh, from Gotham. But no, it's actually,
actually Dr. Crane, not Fraser Crane. But What if Fraser Crane was the Scarecrow's brother? Hold on a second. There's a third Crane brother. He's not in Seattle. He's in Gotham, and he's the Scarecrow. I got to see it happen. Okay.
Yeah, so he's about to attack him with a bunch of drones, and then Fred uses a phone app that is not a trap to turn him off, and then they shoot him with a crossbow.
Now, here's the thing I like about this right off the bat is now I have to assume that Batman and Scooby-Doo coexist in the same universe, which I love because I've been having some real issues with Batman lately as I come to realize that he is essentially a character who uses violence to solve a mental illness problem.
Yeah.
And that his entire series is a long-running argument against empathy for anyone who commits a crime and in favor of just throwing them into an easily escapable asylum. But here, if Scooby-Doo exists in that world, then all bets are off. You know what? Maybe Batman's the right way to handle it, because this world is nuts. If there's just a talking dog who's also a pothead who solves mysteries with some teens who don't have families, then, like, okay, sure, maybe Batman makes sense.
So there's a couple of turnarounds. It looks like Scarecrow's Dead Man Switch is going to launch a huge new batch of drones, and then Shaggy picks up Scooby and uses him like an anti-aircraft gun, and he spits candy that is still fully wrapped out of his mouth and shoots down all of the drones.
Yeah, they were terrified. They locked the doors to the mystery van, not allowing their teammates to get back in. And they've just been swallowing a bunch of fully wrapped candy for the last for the credit sequence.
It's easier to animate.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Now here's I wanted to bring up. So as always, it looks like as always with Scooby-Doo, it looks like it's a supernatural thing. It's some guy with pumpkin powers. No, it's just drones and stuff. Were you guys as kids ever as disappointed as I was that every episode of Scooby-Doo ended with the reassuring message that monsters and ghosts don't exist, and it's just old men who don't want people to go to their amusement parks for some reason?
Well, it is my Scoob breaks with that tradition. There is actual, supernatural stuff going on, and it's my understanding that, some of the more recent Scooby-Doo versions have had actual supernatural stuff going on.
I'm not fully up on Scooby-Doo's modern continuity, which is why one of the characters in this really threw me off when it turned out he was a continuing character.
I mean, I understand, Scooby-Doo in general, I understand having affection for it in the way that I understand having affection for any old garbage from your childhood. But let's stipulate that the original cartoons were not very good. I think they have done some better versions of it over the years, so I hear, but I don't, it is wild to some degree that this is, Scooby-Doo has been in syndication from the 1980s. There have been so many different versions.
He's the longest running television cartoon character that there is. His show's been on the air in some form or another, basically, with few breaks since the early 70s, late 60s. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And, considering his main, when I think about him, his main thing that I can think of is this kind of shit brown color palette that is hideously unappealing. There's nothing visually appealing about the show. And also that every episode ends with them being like, uh-oh, a monster. Psych, kids, there's no magic in the world. It's just an old man in a mask. But this one really turned around for me, partly because it's a very colorful show.
Yeah, it is a much prettier looking version.
I was actually going to say, I feel like the animation was a little bit herky-jerky and not particularly appealing to me, but then I don't watch a lot of animation for kids. How about you daddies out there?
I would say middle of the pack. I mean, it's serviceable. It's certainly better than a lot of the animation you see on television is a lot fewer frames of much less animation.
Yes, per
square inch. How's that?
I would say that, like, for me, like, the limited cell animation was, like, the animation itself was not good, but I liked the, like, the brightness of the designs in it.
So they, you know, they save the day, they start to celebrate, the cops show up to take Scarecrow away, Velma has some verbal sparring with the Scarecrow, and he gives him a mysterious threat. Daphne uses a whole bunch of outdated slang and is behaving like she's drunk on white wine spritzers.
I found that whole sequence surprisingly funny, but at the same time I was like, who is Daphne supposed to be here? Like, what is her personality?
Yeah. Well, Daphne is... Here's what I like about this... What I really like, other than this fact... Well, I'll talk about a lot of things I like. Mm-hmm. One of the things I enjoy about this film is that I feel like one of the things that has put me off of Scooby-Doo to this point is that I feel like Scooby-Doo has been meta at this point longer than it has been Scooby-Doo, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Almost all of our Scooby-Doo media is like a running gag about how she, you know, like a Brady Bunch movie style, like, sort of it's usually riding this line between parody and earnestness, and I feel like this movie really doesn't lean as hard. It's funny of its own creation, right? It what it does is it makes choices for each of these characters that is not necessarily referencing Scooby-Doo from 40 years ago, but is rather like it's making choices that let them be funny. So in this one, Daphne is very strange. I mean, Daphne is the oddball of the group, and Fred is funny not because he's referencing what a lovable doofus,
lunkhead.
Yeah, but like he's funny for other reasons because he is his own character that is not a meta commentary on Fred of yore.
Yield.
No, I agree that, like, when we were watching this, we're like, oh, Daphne gets to be funny in this, because usually Daphne, I think, is the biggest blank in it. They're just like, okay, like, well, she and Fred both are just like, okay, these are like our pretty leaders, but I don't really know who they are.
Yeah, and she's what, like, effective, like she has skills and is the physical one. I guess Fred too can make traps and use apps. So
that was the thing. Fred kept talking about traps, and I was like, "Was that always his thing? Did I forget that Fred's thing was traps? Because I thought his thing was just being like the guy who could walk into a normal like establishment situation and have like some kind of face that is trusted, as opposed to Shaggy, who is clearly a dropout from society.
Yeah. I thought Fred
was just kind of like the guy who would go in and be like, they can trust me. I'm wearing an ascot. It's okay.
No, it is definitely one of those things where it's like a Back to the Future 2 situation where it's like, wait, was Marty's thing before that he doesn't like being called a chicken? Because I don't remember that.
No, he had... Fred has one of the best... one of my favorite Fred lines is he says, I want to do what I do best. I'm going to do traps.
So they decide to celebrate by going trick-or-treating. They talk about how they don't have costumes, which is weird because Fred is wearing like a half-skeleton costume the whole movie.
I mean, he's wearing the costume from Karate Kid that those kids were wearing on Halloween. He could just wear that skeleton costume.
Yeah. So Shaggy and Scooby, of course, chew mouthfuls of candy and then spit it all over themselves and cover themselves with extra candy and become spilled Halloween candy as their costume. It's wild. And then they have a trick-or-treating and dancing montage to an original song, I'm assuming, created for this movie.
There's a few times in the movie where I think it's about to become a musical and then it doesn't quite become a musical. Like, they faint at it and the characters sing a little bit and then it just kind of goes away and you're like, oh, okay. I kind of thought you'd do like a whole number here, but
so
I guess not.
They then find a wrecked drone and a wrecked toxic waste truck, and the two things combine to smear their juice all over a local pumpkin patch, which turns the pumpkins into monsters, which are heretofore known as jack-o'-lanterns.
Now, why do you think they call them jack-o'-lanterns? They're not scavengers, you know, like jackal. They don't have anything like jackals.
I think it
basically sounds
like jack-o'-lantern, Elliot.
Because
behavior-wise, they're a lot kind of like critters that are also zombies, and they can fly and drive custom hot rods.
And they laugh. They've got a very gremlin-y laugh, although I guess it's a critters-y laugh, too.
Yeah.
But unlike Ghoulies, they don't get you in the end.
They kind of do later on. But
that's true.
And are they like munchies? I don't really remember what the munchies used to do.
Well, they look up women's dresses
that's just the poster.
Based on the VHS post.
And what about trancers? Were trancers like this?
Oh man, trancers are completely different. It involves jumping to different dimensions. Jack Death is involved. It's great. So the rest of the gang.
And what about Bad News Bears? Are those
they're
little
just
creatures?
Kind of racist in that 1970s way.
Oh, that's... okay. Got it. So, and what about Little Big Leaks? Is that?
So while Shaggy and Scooby are watching the Jack-o'-lanterns origin story, the rest of the team meets the local sheriff, who threatens them and then takes away the scarecrow, obviously firm uh-huh. case for defund. They meet locals.
Stuart. I don't know. If any criminal seems to be in imminent danger that should be locked up at the moment, it seems to be the scarecrow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not talking about the way that they're handling the scarecrow. I'm just talking about the general sheriff's overreach and his ways interacting with these helpful teenagers.
Okay. Fair,
so we meet a local father and daughter team, Mike and Michelle. Mike thanks them
also known as a family, father daughter team.
they thank them for saving the town and offer to buy y'all a caramel corn later on. Well, we'll see if that ever happens. The gang.
So you're positing that that's sort of a Chekhov's caramel corn purchase offer.
Yeah.
Where if you promise the purchase of a caramel corn in Act 1, by Act 3 we better see that caramel corn get purchased.
Shaggy and Scooby show up. They try and warn the local reporters, who are very excited about the saving of the town, that the town is in fact not saved. There are a bunch of jack-o'-lanterns on their way. Nobody believes them because they're covered in candy and there's an owl stuck on his butt. Daphne then sings an original song that is very kind of stream of consciousness Elliot Kalin quality.
Let me read you from my notes. Daphne sings a real Elliot style song. I wrote. So I appreciated that part.
Yeah, that was great.
I felt seen by Happy Halloween Scooby Doo.
Now we have our next celebrity cameo. Bill Nye shows up and he organizes an airdrop for the team to receive a new fancy mystery machine.
Again, I think this is a strange thing, because at one point, Bill Nye was sort of a figure for children. But at this point in history, I think he's mostly known for like appearing on CNN and sort of like throwing his hands up at the fact that no one believes in science anymore.
But what is fascinating about it is that is what if this movie is about anything.
Yeah.
That is what this movie is about. It's about Velma struggling with the limits of science and belief.
Yeah.
And where those two intertwine and the overlap of fear and science and belief.
That's why Bill Nye is the perfect guy. I wish they didn't desexify him so much, because, you know.
I mean, you do see him as a sexy cat at one point. He is a sexy cat at one point.
Yeah. But the sexiest animal. Like, he could have been sexier. So the new mystery machine is like a cool automated like robocar that has arms.
Wait, so Stuart, your issue with their handling of Bill Nye is similar to Dan's handling with their issue of Elvira, that a character who is just radiating sexuality and is known for that has been neutered for a child audience.
Bill Nye largely appears in the movie as a hologram in their car. And you think it's a Bill Nye AI, but it's not that, because he's interrupted by trick-or-treaters. One of whom is dressed like Aquaman, who he then complains about the unbelievability of the Aquaman character.
Which means
it's real Bill Nye. So Bill Nye's just sitting there as a hologram in the van.
He's just Twitch live streaming direct to their van via hologram. And here's the thing. We live in a world where now in this show where Scarecrow is real, meaning Batman is real. Aquaman... Bill Nye has a lot of issues with how Aquaman could exist, which implies either one, Aquaman is not real in this strange DC Hanna-Barbera hybrid, or two, Bill Nye is always writing letters to the local newspaper saying Aquaman is a hoax and I can prove it. The science doesn't make sense. Here's my 7-minute YouTube video on how Aquaman's not real. Fake news, Aquaman. Yeah. And I just don't want to believe that Bill Nye is harassing Aquaman that way.
I also think that Justin brings up a good point, which is like the fact that he is not an AI and that he's built this for the Mystery Incorporated teens. Like, is he committing himself to always sitting there in that chair, like, helping them and being, like,
their kid? It's a good question.
You know?
I mean, you know, it depends. Like, there's times in our life where we just kind of want to hang out and, like, really enjoy our long-distance connections as opposed to the people that are nearest that maybe know us too well, that sometimes... Mm-hmm. It's better to work on a relationship where there's a little bit of extra distance, so people
with like, a bunch of teens in a van.
Yeah, I mean that's totally normal, right?
I mean, would it be weird? It would be weirder if Bill Nye was just roaming the country with a bunch of teens in a van solving mysteries, right? Like that would be more questionable.
Maybe that's it. He's like he knows that there needs to be distance if he wants to help them out.
Well, and he and Daphne used to date, and he knows it would
now
be weird,
into a weird area.
If you don't have.
So Scooby and Shaggy get tired of hitting a jack-o'-lantern, and so Shaggy sits on it, and then it turns into a monster pumpkin and bites him on the butt, and he says, "Look, I've got a pumpkin butt." That was cool. The reporters and various people are being attacked by the jack-o'-lanterns. A Jewish-coded reporter gets eaten by a giant jack-o'-lantern and then gets turned into a jack-o'-lantern. The ground starts to be torn apart, riven by earthquakes. Shaggy and Scooby jump into a station wagon with Mike and Michelle. Daphne manages to convince Elvira to take her on as a protege, and Fred and Velma drive away in the new Mystery Machine X. And now it's a driving movie.
Yeah,
for like the rest of it
for a long time.
It's you keep remembering like, wait, this car chase is still going on. It is the Fury Road of Scooby Doo movies.
Yeah,
it's
and they
wild.
They have whole conversations with one another from one vehicle to another. I honestly like. The beginning of the movie zipped along a lot more for me, honestly, than this long car chase. Because at a certain point, like.
Oh, you mean the 45 minutes of them driving didn't zip along the way you expected it
would? At a certain point, I'm like, get out of the car, guys.
Yeah, it's like they didn't write any more movies. So they're all driving very slowly to the end of the movie.
There's part of me that imagined them just the movie ending with them driving off into the sunset forever chased by these jack-o'-lanterns never getting out of their cars.
Yeah, it's funny you should mention that because the jack-o'-lanterns are hot on their tail with their own custom hot rods that I think are built out of the parade floats. I can't quite tell.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
They look like that.
It's a real Monster Garage special edition where they just like take these floats and turn them into cool monster trucks and they're like, yeah, we can do that. The customer was a bunch of jack-o'-lanterns, but we decided we were still gonna do as good a job as we could. Hey, we need this part. Well, we have to get that from Japan. A jack-o'-lanterns, this is gonna take a while, but we kind of are chasing these teens. Okay, mm-hmm. We'll do as best as we can. We didn't have a lot of time, so the Monster Garage guys had to get on it. Tools.
Elliot, this shows a greater familiarity with Monster Garage than I would have expected out of you.
I used to watch a lot of Monster Garage. Monster House was never as much into, because there's something about having a crazy themed car that I can understand, but when you theme your house around something, it really... you're not going to want to live inside of a dinosaur cave every day. And that's coming from me, a guy who wishes he could live in a dinosaur cave like 3 days out of the week. But there was a Monster House where it was like, the baby's coming, and we decided to make his room underwater themed. So there's sharks everywhere and fish. And I was like, ooh, I hope this kid likes underwater stuff, because this is going to be a bad room if he doesn't like it.
Yeah,
exactly. I did that with my daughter, my first daughter. We made her room space themed. Mm-hmm. And almost as soon as she could talk, she informed me how much she hated the space theme of her room.
No.
And how much she wished it was princesses. And so I had to have this sad montage of me like taking the rocket ships down off the wall and piling them in my arms, the stupid Doctor Who clock just piled on top. The starry curtains straight in the trash.
Scraping the stars off the ceiling.
Yeah. Wow, I did exactly that. Can we take a brief diversion to just check in on Matthew Lillard real quick? I want to talk about Matthew Lillard, and this is celebratory. I am not ragging on him whatsoever because I'm envious in a way. 2002, Matthew Lillard plays the role of Shaggy Rogers in the movie Scooby-Doo. And then Matthew Lillard was like, you know what? This is good for me. I'm just going to stay here if that's all right.
Yeah.
And everybody can go about their business. I'm just going to chill here.
Except for appearing in Twin Peaks The Return briefly.
Yeah, I'm going to dip in on David Lynch's return to television. And then I'm just going to kick. He's done other stuff. Yeah, he's done other stuff. But the fact that he just like, even the last movie, had Will Forte as Shaggy, and they were like, certainly Matthew's not going to come back after that. And he's like, no, it's fine. I'll just come ahead back. It's and really like not a big, deal.
Like, well, not big, but like big for Scooby-Doo internet controversy where they're all like, everyone's like, why are they getting Will Forte? You know, like Matthew Lillard has been playing this part since 2002.
He has been putting in the work. I mean, yeah, he's great. And like Kate Micucci is so, she's so good as Velma. It's weird that she hasn't always been Velma. It's like, it's that sort of perfect. But I just think it's fascinating. Matthew Lillard's like, that is good. I'll just keep doing it. It's pretty easy and I get money for it. Yeah. And it's fun to keep being this guy. And well, I don't think we have a lot of, like, unless you want to look like, Brett Eyewaner or, you know, one of the Mickey lineage, like you don't have this level of, interconnectedness between a character and a, voice actor that goes on for, you know, years and years and years and years and years. It's wild.
That's always, it's always whenever they would have like a guest star on The Simpsons, then that character would become like a fairly regular or recurring character. Like I imagine, I always think it's weird that Joe Mantegna like still goes in and they're like, yeah. Fat Tony's in this episode. Can you come in and record three lines? Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah. Why not? Yeah, okay.
No problem.
But I always thought that was weird, who did
Shaggy before Matthew Lillard?
Casey Kasem did Casey Shaggy for most of it.
Yeah, and I always thought
it was weird that Casey Kasem had like a had his own big career, but he was still for years the same thing coming in and doing Shaggy and stuff. It's like,
is it just maybe really great to be Shaggy? Is that what we're missing? It's like so what a joyful connection.
This might be a crazy question, but why wasn't Casey Kasem in the live action movie as Shaggy?
Well, I mean, one, by that point, he was either a very old man or dead. I can't remember which.
The action and the live part both would have been challenging.
Yeah, let's take a look at Casey Kasem and see how alive he was when that movie came out. Let's see.
I don't think he was alive. For you to judge me. I think this is a totally normal question to ask.
Okay, so...
I mean, you did ask if it was crazy ahead of time.
That's true. So he voiced Norville Shaggy Rogers from 1969 to 1997, then again from 2002 to 2009, it says. So in 2002, he was 70 years old. So it might have been a little strange if it was like these young people playing the rest of the characters and then a 70-year-old man.
Yeah,
and like a,
it's like Ben 15. Like,
and if anything, what's weird about it is that Shaggy is so clearly a takeoff of Maynard G. Krebs from the Dobie Gillis show, because they're basically the Dobie Gillis characters. Why didn't they just get Bob Denver to do it? I don't know. Look, I'm not Hanna or Barbera. I can't answer these questions. I mean, the answer is probably that Bob Denver wanted too much money. But I don't know. We'll have to go into I guess, an oral history somewhere to find out.
It's also worth noting that Casey Kasem did voice Shaggy Rogers in the year of his death, 2014.
Yeah.
So that was a 72, judging from Wikipedia here. No, sorry, 82-year-old man voicing a local teen, Shaggy Rogers.
Yeah, directors are like, okay, Casey, just remember you're a teenager.
Yeah.
Get into character. This is what teenagers care about.
Is it the Charleston?
I always kind of assumed Shaggy was a little bit older than a teenager at this point.
I mean, they're all supposed to be teens. Here's something that Wikipedia says, and I wonder if it's true, that Casey Kasem was at first uncomfortable about being assigned to Shaggy. As he had never before portrayed a hippie character, he wanted to play Fred, and Frank Welker, who of course has played Fred for the entirety, I think, of the run, wanted to play Shaggy. But instead, CBS assigned them the other way. It's just like that old story about how originally Christopher Walken was going to play Han Solo and Bette Davis was going to play Princess Leia. And they decided at the last minute that they did not want Christopher Walken to play it or an elderly woman to play Princess Leia. You know, and originally Chewbacca was going to be played by the late Clark Gable. It's just amazing when you hear about who was going to play these roles. You know?
Yeah.
Okay.
So back to the chase. Daffy uses a blowtorch to cut the parade float loose from the back of Elvira's car, which then runs into all the jack-o'-lanterns' hot rods, which explode like Mad Max Fury Road. So they get a little bit of breathing space. You know, they're still on their tail, but they got a little bit of room to breathe. Not as much room as in the movie The Chase, where Charlie Sheen and Christy Swanson have a sex scene while being chased by the cops. That's crazy. So they argue about being scared, whether or not it's logical or not. This is when Velma starts talking about mind palaces, and it's like, of course, It's 2020. If you have a smart character in your property, they have to talk about memory palaces, or they have to be able to play fucking chess on the ceiling. Like, mm-hmm. or I don't buy it. I don't believe it. I gotta know. Yeah. They gotta be able to do things in slow motion.
We just started watching that show, and we just watched the episode where she tears the canopy of her bed because chess doesn't work on a bed canopy. It only works on a ceiling.
Yeah. Oh man.
I haven't finished Queen's Gambit yet. Does she play Lionel Richie, who of course has the strength of being able to sit on the ceiling while playing?
The nutty thing is, like, I haven't watched that movie, and I just accepted that as like Stewart's crazy joke about a thing that smart people do.
I got crossover appeal. Okay. So they speed up, they catch up to the sheriff and the paddy wagon that is carrying the scarecrow. It's quite a large van, to be honest with you.
It looks even bigger on the inside. Once they get inside it, it's like they're inside an office building.
Yeah.
There's so much room in there.
The sheriff then gets overtaken by jack-o'-lanterns, and then...
Oh, we skipped my favorite sheriff dialogue.
My mistake. Explain, please.
No, please. Fred and the sheriff are talking.
And by talking, they're like yelling out the window, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're yelling out the window to each other, and the sheriff said that the kids should go back because even though he gives them a hard time... They're pretty much the closest thing to family he's got. Fred said, we've talked 8 or 10 times.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, man.
It's great.
The sheriff is definitely the, at this point, is still a wild card. Was there a previous movie? Because they keep referencing a thing. So there's a previous movie that he was in.
Apparently, the sheriff was in a couple of previous Scooby-Doo movies.
So they've been setting this up for a while.
Oh, this is a long
thing they're setting up. We haven't gotten to, but yeah.
So this says this character was seen in Curse of the 13th Ghost and Return to Zombie Island, setting up his appearance here. Now, my question: you've been to Zombie Island once. You know there's zombies on it. Why are you returning to Zombie Island?
I mean, that's the question that the title raises, Elliot. That's why you're like, I got to see what's so cool about this fucking wallet. Zombie Island.
I lost a ring on Zombie Island. We got to go back.
So the pumpkins take over some construction equipment. That's not going to be good. They then start interviewing the scarecrow. Somehow Scooby and Shaggy take their Scooby snacks and then they flip over some things and land in the paddy wagon with Velma. Bill Nye gets distracted by the trick-or-treaters, as we mentioned, and the mystery machine starts misbehaving. Go on, Dan.
They Scooby snacks, obviously a big part of Scooby-Doo lore. Why are they, like, there's a product out there that's named after this dog? Is that what we are to believe?
Or like, maybe they named the dog after the product.
Well, maybe Scooby is a brand of dog in this world. A breed of dog. Like, maybe Scooby is a kind of dog. Yeah, or brand. I mean, dogs are all working on their brands these days, you know. They're all entrepreneurs, but it does seem it is a packaged product. It's not something they make. They named him after it, you know, like a dog.
That's what Scoob suggests, right? I think is that he was named after the snack.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
You guys think, okay, real quick, just don't even think about it.
Sure.
Sweet or savory?
I think savory.
Yeah.
Yeah. Savory. I think, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
The ones they made for kids are like graham cracker type things, but kids aren't going to eat, you know. It tastes like chicken and a biscuit that kids aren't going to eat.
They need sugar. Stuff. They like kids love anything sweet and they hate anything not sweet. If my kids, my children who like to eat literally spoonfuls of sugar, taking medicine from Mary Poppins,
it's like when kids come into the bar, I'm always like, hey, that cocktail they ordered, put another squirt of simple syrup in it.
I gotta say,
some complex syrup in that. It's got to be real sweet.
When I've been going the other way. When I was a kid, I only liked sort of like salty things, and I got a sweet tooth as I grew older, which explains my expanding waistline, I think. But like,
I was gonna say, that's a bad time. That's when we're all least biologically capable of dealing with sweet teeth.
That's when you want your savory teeth to grow in. Now, I always assume Scooby-Doo was named after Scuba Dooba.
My least favorite twisted metal character.
I always thought he was named after Scuba Dooba, the Bruce J. Friedman off-Broadway play, but maybe that's not it. Maybe that's not the case. But let's say for the purposes of this moment of us talking about this show, that he exists in a world where there is a famous snack called Scooby Snacks. Scooby-Doo as a puppy loved them, and so that they named him Scooby-Doo, because a dog's body, when you think about it in that case, is a machine for turning Scooby into Doo. And that's where the name comes from, everybody. Stuart, what's going on in that car chase?
Okay, so at this point, Velma, Shaggy, and Scooby are inside the armored truck, and they're interrogating the Scarecrow. Then the construction equipment starts to tear apart that paddy wagon. Scarecrow suggests that there may be a different villain, that he's not behind all these pumpkins. Fred saves Mike and Michelle using the Mystery Machine's long arms, and then it runs out of electric power, probably because of all that shit. Velma tries to save the Scarecrow from the jack-o'-lanterns, but has to fight a bunch of them. And then Scarecrow puts on his suit, and he does all kinds of fucking badass flips. He pulls out a scythe. Does he do that stuff in the comics?
To be honest, whenever I've seen a Scarecrow comic, he just uses fear gas to make people fall on the ground, and then he runs away or steals something. I don't think of him as a badass fighter, but everybody in this show is. They all have moves.
This is the useful thing that they, like, where Velma has released him. Like, he is effective in, like, helping them fight. Like, but they set it up like, oh, Velma, like, I gotta go, like, get some clues from him. And they have this scene that is kind of like, you know, Clarice visiting Hannibal Lecter, another thing that kids
very much
so. Yeah, that's the reference that the kids are looking for, too.
Well, because she also does walk past Zsasz in his cell, and he throws a cup full of cum at her, just like in Silence of the Lambs. Yeah, so. Yeah.
But, like, Zsasz, I don't think she gets...
It would be the third weirdest thing in this movie if that did happen.
But I don't think she actually gets any clues from, like, talking to him. Like, she already knew that he said that there was some other person in charge.
She gets nothing from the from the conversation. But then, he becomes a hero and saves them, mainly because he's a big fan of Elvira, it turns out.
Yeah, which makes sense. The whole Mystery Incorporated plus Mike and Michelle all jump into Elvira's car.
Mike and Michelle just keep being in this movie. Yeah. It's super not clear why.
Yeah, he made a vague promise about caramel corn. And...
it's like a life debt. He's like, I've got to follow these kids. Get him that caramel corn.
Yeah, otherwise, like a normal reaction would be like, I'm just going to leave these teenagers to be killed by these pumpkins, right?
I have a daughter.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I was somewhere with my young children, I wouldn't be like, we're in an adventure now, kids. Like, hurry up. It's like, since at any moment Mike and Michelle could just pull off on any exit and just go into a town and not be chased by pumpkin monsters, you know?
Yeah.
So the Scarecrow gets overcome by the jack-o'-lanterns.
Can we mention Mike's in a cowboy costume?
Oh, yeah.
They're both dressed as cowfolk. That's
maybe
true.
That's
I forgot about
part
that.
Of it. Maybe dressed up as a cowpoke, he's like, I feel a sense of I'm honor bound in this like this Western way to.
Yeah, I'm inhabiting the look.
Yeah, the character. Yeah. So
modern day Mike would run and save himself and his daughter, but Old West Mike, he follows a different code.
Yeah,
he's got to do what's right.
He follows the code that when their car runs out of gas, they abandon the vehicle and run off into the woods to a spooky house up a hill. They prepare to fight. Fred does this like Predator, like Dutch from Predator thing, where he makes a bunch of fucking traps and then he like lights a bonfire.
Which Daphne watches while eating popcorn. Yeah. Watches shirtless Fred set up all his traps.
Yeah. And these are much more violent traps too than you would expect.
These are death traps.
These are killing these pumpkins. Scooby and Shaggy then make Velma eat a Scooby snack so they can follow her into her mind palace.
Mm-hmm.
Creates a bond, of course. And
would expect that the FDA would not allow this product on the market if it has this kind of psychotropic properties. This is something
you're trying. It's clearly like leaning into the drug references of Shaggy, but it doesn't map to any sort of like it doesn't map one to one to a drug experience. I mean, they're treating it almost like peyote or something. Like, we'll all eat the same Scooby snacks and we'll be bonded.
Yep.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
So they travel through Velma's memories of the inciting incident. They don't really figure anything out, right?
They do because apparently their consciousness merges enough that she sees the drone that Shaggy saw earlier that has the the writing on it that will help crack the case.
Yeah. So the pumpkins arrive, and all their cars just get wrecked. It's pretty crazy. And then Fred's traps murder a shitload of pumpkins. Then they charge and murder more pumpkins, along with a musical montage. This was pretty fun. And then, despite all
the... there's so many points in the movie where they're like, I guess we got to fight some pumpkins, and they're just massacring these pumpkins. They could easily take out all of them. And then at a certain point, they go, "Up, oh, more pumpkins! We got to get out of here." Yeah. And I'm never quite sure how they do that mental math, but you got to keep the story moving, I guess. Uh-huh. And there's that giant pumpkin that's the size of like an elephant.
Yeah, I think they're mostly afraid of that big pumpkin.
Yeah. So despite all their efforts, they're surrounded. Velma admits that she is frightened, and she then charges into the alpha pumpkin's mouth. Then an app shuts down all the pumpkins. Turns out that they're all drones, and that the alpha pumpkin is like a drone factory that like captures people and then takes their stuff and puts it on a new jack-o'-lantern and then keeps them in a crappy little cell.
It's like it's an elaborate way of making you think that people are being turned into pumpkin monsters when the pumpkin monsters would be just as effective if they didn't try to convince you that they were turning people into pumpkin monsters.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and they're
quick,
just eating people.
Justin, if you're captured by the alpha pumpkin, what of your garments would they take to put on a jack-o'-lantern to make us think, oh, fuck, Justin's now a jack-o'-lantern?
Yeah, a Hawaiian shirt, would be the one. Maybe my woodworking goggles.
Yeah, sure.
They would fly out wearing those, and we'd say, it's a Mac-O-Lantern. We got to get out of here.
Yeah.
Guys, as a Flophouse listener, I have made, I would say a not infrequent situation is me listening to the podcast with little to no familiarity of the film that you are describing. Uh-huh. But I am listening to this discussion as both a viewer of the film and a listener, and this has got to be one of the ones that sounds the most made up. This has got to be way up there on like Stewart is saying these things as if like, well, and then you know the alpha pumpkin has been transforming them, and the Velma is in the mind palace with Shaggy, and their consciousness is formed. It is indescribably strange.
Yeah,
well,
the amount of times I had to pause the movie to be like, okay, I gotta write some sentences down. Also,
hearing it described back to me, like, really has sort of undone, like, a lodestone of, like, Scooby-Doo in general, where I'm just like, okay, wait, hold on. Why does the villain need to convince everyone else that something supernatural is happening?
Yeah,
but you, you know,
it's never been adequately answered in 50 years of Scooby-Doo productions. It's basically just a means to get these incredibly charismatic characters: Shaggy, a cowardly hippie; Scooby-Doo, a cowardly dog; Velma, a smart nerd; Daphne, a blank, a sociopath whose mask hides nothing behind it, and Fred, who's kind of, you know, a lumbering lunkhead with a sweater on. It's just to get those guys in action, and traps. It's just to get them in action and hope that they eventually run into the Three Stooges, or perhaps Sonny and Cher, or Tim Conway, or someone else that you'd see on TV in the 1970s, you know?
That's wild, because you see in the character select screen, you'd see Fred, and you'd be like, he's a bruiser, he's just going to go in there, he's going to hit big, but he's going to be slow, but you wouldn't expect him to be a trap character, but whatever, man, you know, it's cool, sometimes games change it up.
It is funny seeing, like, those old celebrity Scooby-Doos, because you have the same sensation, like, when you're watching an old Muppet show, where you're like, I guess this person was popular at one point. I don't know who they are. Like, you know, sometimes you get a Mark Hamill, and then sometimes you get someone, and you're like, okay, they were a dancer, I guess? I don't know. Like,
along with Elvira, they, almost at the end, reference a celebrity crossover that literally no child will enjoy or appreciate. There's a Phyllis Diller nod that is absolutely bizarre. So, no reason to think that a child would enjoy that.
So what would be the like modern day equivalent if Scooby-Doo was doing with celebrities now, if they did them, would it be like, I don't know, are they teaming up with Judge Judy, or are they teaming up with Jim Parsons? Like, who would it be?
I actually have an answer for this, because the current series, or at least the most recent series, is called Scooby-Doo and Guess Who, which is each episode is with a new celebrity. So just recently we have the premiere episode was NBA basketball legend Chris Paul.
Okay.
And then there's the Ghost of Abraham Lincoln is in the next one.
I mean, that's
there's
not a crossover. That doesn't seem like a real guest star, I have to say.
I mean, that's a pretty big gift.
If they can get him.
I'd be excited.
I mean, if it says Ghost of Abraham Lincoln himself in the credits, then yes, that's a huge get. But
yeah.
This is the yeah, so we've got the next one is Wanda Sykes, and then it's Sherlock Holmes. And then it's Ricky Gervais, and then it's Wonder Woman, and wait, then it's Penn and Teller.
Ricky Gervais is going to tell everybody to be atheists.
Yeah, is it Ricky Gervais as himself?
It's got to be.
Guys,
right?
I'm going to tell you I'm just trying to tell you that it's Ricky Gervais and then Wonder Woman and then Penn and Teller and then Urkel from Family Matters.
Wait, but it's Urkel or it's Jaleel White?
No, it's Urkel.
It's the character Urkel.
And Jim Gaffigan. Okay. And Weird Al. Sia.
Yep.
I love the idea. No, this is good because it's like Scooby-Doo and the Mystery Gang. They're like the man thing in the Marvel comics who's the guardian of the nexus of all realities. Yeah. So who knows what could pop out, a barbarian, Howard the Duck. The Scooby-Doo gang can meet anybody in any reality at any point in time. Yeah. You know, that's pretty – that one week they're hanging out with Jordan Peterson, and the next week it's them and Justin Bieber, and the next week it's them and Rick Moranis. I guess these are just all Canadian people.
Yeah,
hold on.
There's no maybe limit to your mind palace.
I'm losing it over here, guys, because then we've got what's described as comedy rocker Kenan Thompson. Okay.
Comedy rocker.
Comedy rocker.
Batman. Whoopi Goldberg. Halsey. And then Mark Hamill. And the Flash. And then George Takei. And then Steve Buscemi.
Wait, Steve Buscemi's in it?
Then we check it with Jeff Dunham. And then we're just going to take a real quick spin over to see Maddie Ziegler from Dance Moms. And then his set over the horizon, it's Jeff Foxworthy. Followed up by Malcolm McDowell.
What? Malcolm?
So it sounds like they literally put the names of every human being in the world in a hat.
Including
and they just
some
pick them out.
Are fictional characters.
Including some fictional characters.
Guys, while investigating a werewolf attack on Broadway, the gang runs into actor and voice talent Christian Slater, who joins him on this heartbreaking song-filled musical mystery centered around the prom night that changed his life forever. And then it's finally Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Ooh, heartbreaking.
Holy shit. Season 2 just kicked off, though. Make sure to get in there.
Yeah.
You're going to meet Casey Musgraves
Morgan
Freeman.
Oh, wow. A team up I never expected, but
this
welcome.
Week we're teaming up with Billie Eilish, and next week it's Odysseus, and the week after that it's Arsenio Hall, and then the week after that it's Adam of Adam and Eve fame.
Actually, it's Kristen Schaal and Joey Chestnut.
Joey
and,
Chestnut.
Guys, wow, man alive!
I'm so mad about you.
It's if it goes in if it continues in this direction, it's gonna be eventually Matthew Lillard, and it's gonna be Ouroboros. The shag will eat his own tail.
That's when the Earth explodes.
Yeah.
Okay, so the sheriff reveals his crazy plan. It turns out the sheriff's the villain. No big surprise. So the sheriff's the villain. He has a crazy plan to spend millions of dollars to slowly become a local sheriff and be mean to some teenagers and then steal some crystals and then
millions. Well, because he was a rich guy who the kids unmasked and got in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. So that justifies his spending millions of dollars.
I'm saying it's a revenge plot. I'm not saying the sheriff didn't win the lottery and decide that he was going to spend that millions to get even with some kids.
That's what I'm concerned about, is that the sheriff had illegally stolen the money or something.
Well,
so they track.
But can I say, like, he's already failed once at this, like, I'm going to have a supernatural scam thing. Like, why? If he's going to have revenge on the kids, why not just show up and shoot him?
Hey, look, Scorpion keeps getting caught by Spider-Man, but every time he breaks out of jail, he puts that damn tail back on just tries to hit Spider-Man with it. Like, people get stuck in cycles, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, because after a while, you're like, I spent so much time on learning how to use this fucking Scorpion tail.
Yeah,
I don't want to try and do something different.
He's like, I'm too old to learn a new employment skill. This is
what
I do.
He didn't want to change his Twitter handle.
Why do you think I'm still a comedy writer?
It's so hard for me to get at Scorpion1.
Yeah. So they track the sheriff's phone. They try to catch him, but the Scarecrow's already got him. His car has been abandoned. They wander.
It's just implied that the Scarecrow has taken him to torture or kill him. Like, he's just gone in the Scarecrow's clutches.
Yeah. So they then wander down the street with Elvira. They happen upon a Halloween party. They argue with the host, who keeps inviting them, and they keep trying to come up with excuses for why they shouldn't go to the party.
At this point in the movie, I was like, why is the movie still happening? Yeah. Why aren't they just joining this party? Why are they so resistant to being at this party?
Shaggy and Scooby see a snack station, so they start to drool so much, their drool becomes a river, and then they stand up surf all the way to the snack station. Elvira reveals that she realizes Daphne's whole reason for trying to be mentored by Elvira is that so that she could take Elvira's clothes and be Elvira for Halloween. So Elvira gives Daphne her wig, which is actually a monkey, and then wanders away.
Well, also, let's be clear. At first, they're like, hey, was your plan to take Elvira's clothes for a costume? And then it becomes implied that it's more like a single white female situation.
That's when
they mention Phyllis Diller. They say, we went on three mysteries with Phyllis Diller before we realized it was Daphne. So Phyllis Diller's body is just in a freezer somewhere while Daphne was running around with her clothes. But yeah, I think the moment when Elvira takes off her wig and it's revealed to be a big ape that sits on her head was I think when the movie kind of entered a new realm for me.
Yeah, bald Elvira wanders off and sort of gives an outro to the movie.
Yeah, a little Crypt Keeper outro. Her head turns around and she's got a scary face.
Famously red-haired Cassandra Peterson, suddenly walking away bald for some reason. But
yeah, because they have to have the reveal where she turns, like her neck twists all the way around like an owl, and she has a weird alien face on the back of her bald head.
It's like the
again, not for kids.
No,
not a good fit for children at all.
The movie in the last five minutes, in the last 5 minutes, it kind of gives a glimpse of what this movie could have been if it was even crazier. Like, it was, the movie is like it's writing this thing where it's like, yeah, I guess it's Scooby Doo, but it's a little sillier. And then the end is just like, hey, you know what? This is what you could have been watching. Just bonkers.
A glimpse of the madness is Happy Halloween, Scooby Doo. So, what's the next part of the podcast, Dan?
Well, we got to make our final judgments on this movie, whether it's a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie you kind of liked. I will say, if you were a bigger Scooby-Doo fan, like, Audrey was eating this up. So I have to assume that if you like Scooby-Doo, this is, like, the Citizen Kane of Scooby-Doo films. I liked a lot of the silliness. I got to admit, like, at a certain point, the movie started dragging for me, which is crazy because it is only 70 minutes long and so much crazy stuff is happening at all times. But there came a point where I'm like, all right, I know that the ending to this is not going to make any sense. Let's just get to the solution of the mystery. But I guess marginally, look, if this is your thing, it was fun. I kind of liked it, but it's borderline. What do you guys have to say?
I would say also that I kind of liked it. I'd give it a more full-throated recommendation than Dan did. I would say it does drag a little in the 4 hours or so that they spend driving on the road, but that's just based on reality. They said Crystal Cove is this far away from the nearest town. We cannot have them drive less because people are going to be like, wait a minute, there are no towns that close to Crystal Cove. They've got to be on the road longer than that. And I totally understand not wanting to end up in the goof section of IMDb. But otherwise, as someone who is not a fan of Scooby-Doo, it was fun to see a Scooby-Doo thing where I was like, oh, there's like a lot of funny jokes in this. But like Dustin was saying, it's not all meta jokes, you know. There's some, but it's not all like them just undercutting what a Scooby-Doo should be. And until we get that gritty, realistic reboot of Scooby-Doo a la Detective Pikachu, then this is the best we're going to get. So I say I kind of liked it.
Yeah, it's basically that Venture Brothers episode. I think I'll join you guys. I'll say it's a movie I kind of liked. I will say that trying to write a plot summary for this movie was like Pecos Bill trying to lasso a fucking whirlwind. but stuff certainly happened.
Yeah. And Justin, I think you might be the most positive.
Well, it's just, you know, as you watch enough animated films as a parent that so many of them are and Elliot can attest to this, so many of them, the work has not been put into not even making it something adults can enjoy, but just like a functional piece of entertainment.
Yeah.
That when you stumble on something like that, it's almost kind of a nice surprise. Like, we turned it on around Halloween because, I don't know, Scooby-Doo, it's a new Halloween movie, and it, you know, whatever, kids, they watched Scoob and enjoyed it, which is doesn't speak well of their character. But they have two parents. I'm only half of their parents, so.
The whole time they were clapping and laughing at Scoob, you would turn to your wife and say, "This is your, these are your genes.
This is your genes.
This is not my genetics."
It's like it's just kind of a relief when you find something that's like, "Oh, somebody actually tried on this. Like, somebody actually put the work in and made this, like, made some good jokes in here. I can watch this 30 times and not be driven mad." So yeah, on that basis, I think it's a quality piece of entertainment. You're not going to go in getting your guts busted constantly as an adult, but if you go in a little in the right frame of mind, there's a lot of fun stuff going on. It is surprisingly there's a lot of adult comedies that do not deliver as many laughs as this film does. I will say that. We're in a stage in Hollywood where actually funny comedies are pretty hard to come by. Mm-hmm. So this will have to do.
this will have to do, screams the quote on the box. From just a minute.
This will have to Scooby-Doo.
In a world bereft of truly funny adult comedies, this will have to Scooby-Doo.
That's the name of the next film. This will have to Scooby-Doo.
Congratulations! You've won a ticket to attend an exclusive opportunity in a relaxing environment with two lovers.
Wow. Well, this sounds like a sort of proposition of sorts, but really it's an ad for our podcast. Wonderful. It's a show we do here on Maximum Fun where we talk about things that we like and things that we're into.
I'm Rachel McElroy, and you just heard Griffin McElroy, and we are excited for you to join us as we talk about movies and music and books.
Things like sneezing or the idea of rain.
Can you get news or information you can use?
Absolutely,
so.
You cannot, because we're here to talk to you about pumpernickel bread.
You can find new episodes on Wednesdays.
So catch the wave!
I can remember as a child thinking it was odd that here was this can full of meat.
I'm Jesse Thorne. This week on my show Bullseye, David Letterman on shame, regret, and canned hams.
Is this the best delivery version of pork?
That's this week on Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
The Flophouse is sponsored in part by Squarespace. With Squarespace, you can turn your cool idea into a new website. You can blog or publish content. You can sell products and services of all kinds and much, much more. And Squarespace helps you do this by giving you beautiful, customizable templates created by world-class designers. Everything optimized for mobile right out of the box. A new way to buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions, free and secure hosting, and more. Head to squarespace.com/flop for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code FLOP to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Now, Dan, I had an idea for a website, and I was hoping that, inspired by today's movie, and I was wondering if Squarespace, you think, could help me.
Probably, but let's hear it.
Okay, so this is a business website. It is called www.nonster.com. That's N-O-N, N as in no, as in non, not a monster. How many times has this happened to you? You hear a story about a ghoul, ghost, monster, gremlin, or other fantastical being somewhere in our great nation. You get in your van, you get your friends together, you get your talking dog with you, you head to that location to see this cool monster for yourself, only for it to turn out to be some dude who has plans for a public park and wants to buy it and turn it into a oil refinery. So he's scaring people away by pretending to be like, you know, the Pittsburgh Palooka or something like that. What a disappointment. I wish I'd saved the time, energy, and the drive.
Isn't the Pittsburgh Palooka the nickname of the lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania?
That's a good point and very topical. Okay, so instead, let's call him the Boise Boogeyman. So you go all the way to Boise, and not a boogeyman, just some dude. I wish that there had been a website out there a kind of Snopes legend-denying website that told me when it was a monster, or what I'm calling a nonster, or not monster. Now, I know there's some difficulty here because monster and nonster sound very similar.
Yeah.
Be sure that you are putting in nonster with an N as in Norville, not a monster with an M as in Moreville, which is what you would say if you wanted more of a ville.
Yeah.
You, this isn't enough town, give me more of it. Whereas Norville is what you would be saying if you're talking about Norville Jones, the main character from The Miracle of Morgan's Creek, starring Eddie Bracken and Betty Hutton. Now, www.nonster.com, it's your place for both public crowdsourced comments on what are real monsters and what are not, and what are, basically what are real monsters and what are real nonsters. So we have people all over the place. It's like Waze, but for monsters and nonsters. And they send in their reports, and you can just look it up, tip, tap, tap. That's you typing in the nonster's name on the keyboard. And up, it turns out that the San Antonio psycho, I thought it was some kind of toxic waste created humanoid chud. Nope, it turns out it's just some guy who is trying to sell his minor league baseball team to a different city and wants it to seem that the stadium is haunted
now,
or something.
I don't mean to split hairs here, but you just said humanoid chud, and now aren't chuds always humanoid? Isn't that part of the description? That's like saying ATM machine.
That's a very good point, and you know what? Forget the whole website. You just figured out you just figured out that I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we have these kind of rap sessions, right? Is so I can poke holes and like find out if there's any mistakes or, you know.
No, I appreciate it. So when I said instead of humanoid chud, maybe I should have said Leonid chud, kind of lion-based cannibalistic humanoid underground dweller.
I don't know if it would have worked, but it's over now. You know, we're past it.
That's true. Yeah. We can't change the past, and I'm just Monday morning quarterbacking at this point.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's www.nonster.com, a website I am now officially canceling because Stuart has pointed out that I'm the wrong person to run it.
Yeah.
Dan, maybe you want to take this on, but Squarespace, I think, is the company to help you.
Well, that was certainly an effective ad for Squarespace. Stuart, do you have a Jumbotron for us?
I do have a Jumbotron. Garbage warlocks Alex and Ian dive headfirst into the raging dumpster fire that is seasonal anime. Join them as they uncover hidden gems, discuss how a snake girl would wear a onesie, and hand out awards to the best shows at the end of every season. With almost 2 years' worth of episodes, there's plenty of goofs and random tangents to dive into. Look for the Protagonist Seat podcast on YouTube, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, when they say seasonal anime, do they mean anime that comes in seasons, like TV seasons, or do they mean like a very Akira Christmas, that kind of stuff?
That is a question that is not explained. I can't answer it, but maybe there is like fall anime, summer anime.
Maybe that's it. Yeah. Like Happy 4th of July Project, Aiko, like that kind of stuff?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All like, my anime references, as you can tell, are 30 years old.
Yep. Ranma half is now Ranma 43 and a half, right?
I guess. Anyway,
it's been a long time. I don't know.
Happy Dragon's Balls giving everyone. Uh-huh. So I have another Jumbotron. This is a message for Nathan, and this message is from Sarah. And Sarah writes to Nathan. She says, "Happy 40th. You're one of my oldest friends, and now you're also old," in capital letters. "I'm so glad we've remained friends all these years, and I'm inspired by how much you've accomplished. You're truly the Stuart Wellington to my Elliot Kalin. John is obviously Dan, which means Ellis must be the Flophouse house cat. It's perfect. Love and hugs to you both, Sarah." How
That's
sweet.
Lovely.
That's a sweet message, and I wish I knew who all these people were so I could see who we, you know, track toward. Who we match up with.
Yeah, how well we map, yeah.
Yeah. So, guys, you know, Sharko and Hippo is still available. Stuart still owns some bars.
I mean, Sharko and Hippo, for people who are just checking in, is a book that I wrote. It's not, otherwise that sentence that Dan said would, though true, would seem completely incomprehensible.
Mm-hmm. Well, they'd hear it, yes. And they'd be like, what is that? Then they'd Google it, and hopefully the first Google result would be the book you wrote and not something, I don't know, weird? Or
no, probably it would be nonster.com telling you that Sharko and Hippo are not real monsters. Yeah. They are in fact the stars of my new children's book, Sharko and Hippo. But Sharko and Hippo, it's available in bookstores everywhere. Get it through your local independent bookstore, and of course Hinterlands Bar, still barring along after all these years. I'm Casey Kasem.
And Minnie's bar, which is barring after slightly not as many years, but it's still barring. I'm Casey Kasem.
Dan, are you also Casey Kasem?
I'm also Casey Kasem. And Elliot is Casey Kasem? And back to the show. All right. Well, next we move on to letters. And the first letter is from Marlena, last name withheld, who writes...
Marlena Dietrich, one of the great legends of the screen. It's an honor to get a letter from her.
She writes, I just listened to your recent episode with Mike Rice, and I thought I'd share the story of why that's a big deal for me. So here's the tale of how a brief encounter with Mike Rice made me accidentally and hopefully temporarily ruin The Simpsons for myself.
I think his name might be pronounced Reese.
Yeah? I was confused, too, and I...
it's spelled Rice.
Yeah, I looked up the pronunciation of that name, and... The internet said Rice, but I don't know if...
Let's call him Mike Simpsons.
Yeah, Mike Simpsons. This brings me to a few winters ago. My dad and I went to the Museum of Modern Art for a showing of silent comedy, something we both love. When the couple next to us took their seats and started talking to each other, I tensed with recognition. "That's a Simpsons writer," I whispered to my dad. I was certain it was Mike Simpsons, whose voice I had been listening to in commentaries for all those years. I surreptitiously Googled to match the face to the name, and yes, it was definitely him. There wasn't time to do or say anything since the movies began shortly after. I did enjoy finding out what jokes Mike Simpsons laughed at, though. I'm a pretty reserved and somewhat socially anxious person, so I knew I would need my dad's prompting to tell Mike that I was a huge fan after the screening. Unfortunately, my dad is even more reserved than I, and when I asked if I should say something, he did not encourage it. So I didn't say anything, a decision I regretted pretty much instantly after leaving the theater. This regret was compounded when my mom and friends I told assured me that he probably would have been flattered and not annoyed by the intrusion. The regret icing on the cake was realizing that I had actually been wearing my Bartman sweatshirt to the screening. Now, as I said, I am an anxious person and I have trouble compartmentalizing, so instead of just having a twinge of regret when I listened to the commentaries, I had soured the entire experience of The Simpsons for myself. I couldn't casually watch an episode without thinking of what a mistake I'd made. As time has passed, I've started to watch again, but never with the same fervor and joy as I used to have. Well, there might be other reasons. It was a big step.
Wow,
when
big
I listened.
Dig on the show, Dan.
Oh, man.
It's certainly for a show to maintain consistent quality over 30 years and 4 million episodes, but come on, Dan.
I watched till very recently. So it was a big step when I listened to your episode with Mike as a guest and didn't feel any psychic pain. Maybe I'm back on my way to wholeheartedly loving my favorite show again. The next step is wearing all my various Simpsons shirts again. Thank you, Peaches, for being part of the healing process. Marlena, last name withheld. I just, wanted to share that moment of healing.
Sure,
the Flophouse is here for you in ways big and small.
And you know what? If you ever run into him again, introduce yourself. As longtime listeners may remember, I have long regretted that I never sent Ray Harryhausen a fan letter because I was always like, I'll get around to it. And then, of course, he was an old man and he passed away. But the way to do it, just a tip for next time, is not to do it the way my grandma does, where there was more than one occasion where she and I would be at the theater, me and my grandmother, who I love, and Wallace Shawn from Princess Bride would be in the audience, and she would ask me who he was and what his name was, mere seats away from the man himself. And I would try to surreptitiously say, oh, that's Wallace Shawn. What? What's his name? His father was the editor of The New Yorker. What's his name? And it was always right. Excruciating, and then after the fact, I found it pretty funny.
And also, famously, kind of a grumpy man. So I'm sure.
Oh yeah, sure. I'm sure he did not enjoy having an old woman loudly near him question who he is.
I have long tried to encourage people that, like, if you see someone whose work you enjoy, I don't care how famous they are. I think everyone always likes to hear, I like the things you make. Yeah. That's a little, especially if you're having a kind of a bummer day. Yeah. I think that's all. I can't imagine a situation where I wouldn't want someone to be like, good.
Yeah.
You're good.
Yeah. Bend their ear, I think I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, the seedy underbelly of that advice is that one time I was at the LAX and I saw John C. McGinley, and I thought, I'm going to go over there and say hi to John C. McGinley. I love John C. McGinley. And we're in line, at the thing, you know, in the TSA line. So like we kept serpentining past each other, and I had all these opportunities. I'm gonna do it now. And afterwards, I was kicking myself. I was like, damn it, should have said something to John C. McGinley. And as I was boarding my plane, I realized in my head, that was John C. Reilly. And if I had gone up to him, I would have said, Mr. McGinley, Mr. McGinley, I'm sure you get this all the time, which I doubt he does because his name's John C. Reilly. I would have been stoked to see John C. McGinley too, but I saved myself that
jumped
time.
Jumped into some like scrub scenes and stuff. And...
yeah.
That's why it's always a good idea, as the letter writer said, to Google the person just to make sure you got everything right.
I would say judge the vibe, see if they're in a good mood. I did see Adam Scott at Tootsie, the Broadway show of Tootsie, and afterwards, like, I was very close to him, and if I had been one person closer, I would have told him how much I love Piranha 3D, which is not ironic. But he kind of looked like he was keen on getting out of there and not being
impossible. He saw Tootsie. There's no way that's possible. Yeah. Well, I was probably still laughing.
You would have been the second best part of his night after seeing Tootsie.
Well, I mean, it's kind of famous among Broadway hounds that he was lobbying very hard for the lead role in Tootsie and did not get it. And he went to every show just to scowl through it and think about how much better he would have been in that role.
That was the guy from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, right?
Who actually played it? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
Rachel Bloom.
Okay,
that's not a guy, and it's not the person who was in Tootsie. That's the star of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Second and final letter of the evening or morning, whenever you listen. Amy, last name withheld, writes.
Amy Adams. Again, hugely impressive. Yeah.
I'm writing to ask if you could all name a pet after any character from a movie. What name would you choose? Thanks for the great podcast. Amy, last name withheld. I got to say, my last two cats have been named after... old movie stars, not necessarily their characters. In one case, named after the character that came to be identified with them. My first cat, Lulu, was named after Louise Brooks, who was often called Lulu because of her character in Pandora's Box. And we called her that because early on, Lulu did not make any noise. And we thought, is this cat mute? And so a silent film star... came to my mind. And Archie is named after Archie Leach, which is Cary Grant's real name. Guys, do you have characters from movies you would name your cats after, or dogs or pets of any kind?
Sure. I mean, the main reason why I think Charlene's not going to let me ever buy a dog or adopt a dog is because I would 100% name them after the most noble of all the Jedi. That's right. Key Doggy Mundi, or Key Doggy Doggy, or Dog Addy Mundi. I haven't decided which one I want to go.
Or Rodney Doggerfield.
Doggerfield. That's already taken, and also not a character. That's the actor. I'm talking about the character Key Addy Doggy.
It's kind of the character he played eventually. You know.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I probably, you know, The Thin Man is one of my favorite movies, and of course, I'd name it after the titular Thin Man, Claude Winant. So my dog, Claude Winant, or maybe it's a fish or a cat, that's what I'd name him. Or her. Claude Winant. Sorry, Clyde Winant.
Probably Teddy KGB from Rounders.
Sure. Sure.
because the pet's accent is outrageous.
I'll splash the dog food whenever I want. No, it just seems like it'd be fun to have a dog named Teddy KGB.
Sure.
It would be good now that I think about it. I came up with that in the moment, but I think it would be
powerful. Sometimes that's the best ones.
I mean, Scooby-Doo tells us, as we've postulated, that a dog is named
after... That'd be a good one, too, Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo is named after... Dogs are named after the foods they like best. So I guess if I had a dog, he'd be named Pill Wrapped in Cheese.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Does that mean I have to start calling my 2-year-old old Pringles?
Yes.
Because that's her whole thing. Carpet Pringles. Get over here.
We earlier before recording this, my family and I, we went out to play some baseball at the local rec center, and just the family. And my younger son, the 2-year-old, was holding a rice cake. And every time a tiny grain of rice cake would fall on the ground, he would scrabble for it. That was the one he wanted to eat the most, and I'd have to pull it from his hand and throw it away. And he literally has a whole rice cake in his hand, but it's like each grain in the dirt is what he wants to eat. Mm-hmm. What a country, am I right?
In this economy? So now the last segment comes, and that is recommendations. Movies that maybe, you know, would be... an adult human would fully enjoy, rather than
or watch it as a movie marathon along with Happy Halloween, Scooby Doo.
Sure. I want to recommend. I'm glad Justin is here for this. I may be recommending this in part because Justin is here. Yesterday, a friend of ours had a Tom Arnold marathon on Twitch of three movies released, I believe, in 1996. He had Carpool, The Stupids, and Big Bully. That was Tom Arnold's big year, I guess, when they're really trying to make him happen. And I only saw in full The Stupids, which is the one I cared about, because as a big My Brother and Me listener, I've heard it referenced many times. And I gotta say, it was very funny. I laughed a lot.
It's really good. The Stupids holds up. It is fantastic.
Yeah.
What a film.
I think it was not appreciated because, as the title would suggest, it is very stupid. But it is stupid in a smart way. Like, they have really put a lot of work into creating a house of cards that pays off by the end of just, like, idiotic misapprehensions. And like, I don't think everyone in it is doing a great job. Like, I kind of feel like Mrs. Stupid is playing stupid more than like Tom Arnold. I believe with my full heart and soul that he is this stupid character. But Jesus, it's a hard one to recommend to people because they might watch it and be like, what is wrong with you? But I was watching it and being like, I can't imagine anyone not laughing at this.
There's an actor named Bug Hall in it.
Yeah.
Plays Buster Stupid. Okay.
Yeah.
Bug Hall, it's hilarious. You and I had a, we watched the entire Bug Hall omnibus because I watched Little Rascals with my kids last week. So those are all the Bug Hall movies. Yeah. Now, he played Alfalfa in that one. Now, that is all the Bug Hall films.
He's in a bunch of other movies, it turns out, as a more of a grown up. I didn't realize this, Bug Hall. I like Atlas Shrugged Part 2, apparently he's in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Max movies. Landis is in it as a graffiti artist? Oh, damn, well, you must have loved that.
It's a John Landis directed film.
Oh, yeah. John Landis, he doesn't murder anyone in this one, right?
No, he does
not
murder.
How many people died during the making of The Stupids, Dan?
if anyone died, he covered it up effectively.
Wait, yes. And there's a cameo in it, according to Wikipedia, from director Costa Gavras, so that's pretty amazing. The director of Z.
David Cronenberg is in it as well. There are a lot of directors' that's cameos.
And, you know,
Nick Garris.
I'm not recommending The Little Rascals, but I do want to say that Donald Trump is in The Little Rascals as the father of the rich kid.
Oh, right.
And there's an outtake where he reaches over and steals this lady's popcorn, and it's clearly like improvised. Mm-hmm. He like reaches over and steals this lady's popcorn and eats some of it, and it's like, oh, that's a funny outtake. Okay, fine, put that in. There's a different outtake, and then they cut back to this one, and they show Donald Trump spitting the chewed up popcorn onto the person sitting in front of them and saying, this popcorn really is terrible. That is not improvised. That is just what he was doing with his human life. And they caught it on a film and they just put it in the outtakes. He was really a terrible person.
Well, slice of here.
Yeah, always. It was, it's not like power drove him mad. He was always a bad person.
No, he sucks always.
Yeah. Dan, the Wikipedia list of celebrity cameos for The Stupids, it makes me want to see it because it's almost like a Scooby-Doo series, because it's like, you got Jenny McCarthy, okay, it was made in the 90s. Then you've got Atomy Goyen, Norman Jewison, Robert Wise, Guillo Pontecorvo. This is, Max, John Landis is really calling in all of his director buddies to be in The Stupids.
A lot of very, very strange jokes in it that you would not expect.
Yeah.
But,
that sounds great. It's funny you mentioned David Cronenberg. I'm going to recommend a movie called Possessor or Possessor Uncut, which is directed by the son of David Cronenberg, Brandon Cronenberg. It is a nice little gross thriller. It's kind of like if you took a laser disc of a Christopher Nolan movie and kind of like pressed your thumb on it to slow the whole thing down. It's a high concept about an assassin who, using technology, transfers her consciousness into somebody else's brain and then uses them to kill people. And it's super slow and gross, and I liked it a lot. So, Possessor. Yeah.
Stuart, I want to say, if I that's what I would have recommended. I just watched it. That's what I would have recommended if I hadn't decided to throw caution to the wind and recommend this to you.
Yeah.
Should I go next?
Sure.
I'm going to recommend a film drama from the early 70s. I'm going to recommend a movie called Cinderella Liberty, starring James Caan and Marsha Mason, with Eli Wallach in a supporting role. And this is a movie that I had been wanting to see for a number of years because I could not understand the title, Cinderella Liberty. And it turns out it's because it's the name.
Just two different words.
It's just two different words to throw them together. No, it's what they call when you are on shore leave in the Navy, but you have to be back at midnight. So you don't have a full night. You just have to be back at midnight. James Caan is a sailor who has shore leave and in Seattle and falls in love with essentially a prostitute who has a teenage son and finds that his records have been lost by the Navy. This is the 70s. It's literally a paper file that they can't find. And so he's stuck there and can't be put on another ship. And he forms a relationship with her. And it is a real, sometimes funny, sometimes serious character study of these characters. And I liked it a lot. And it was fun seeing James Caan playing a character who is not, a blustery, tough guy. And so I liked it a lot. It's directed by Mark Rydell, who also directed one of Dan's favorites, For the Boys, starring Bette Midler. So so that's Cinderella Liberty. Justin, what would you like to recommend?
There's so many. I only get to do this show once, and I've seen so many movies that I'd like to recommend. But you know what I'm going to go with?
I mean, you could come back.
At the start of the show, you were pretty sincere about not having it back on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that decision's been made. No, I want to recommend Velocipastor. You guys seen Velocipastor?
No, I've only seen clips from it, and I've yet to see the whole movie, and it seems, bonkers.
It's bonkers. It's a really interesting, because it starts out seeming like it's going to be sort of an intentionally bad camp thing, and there is some of that, and then there's some jokes that just work earnestly, and then the strangest thing about this film is that every once in a while, it will just pick up competence and put it over its shoulder and just be a competent movie for 15 minutes and then just drop it again. And it's almost like the director is teasing you like, oh yeah, yeah, no, I know how to, I could do a good, there's a love scene in this movie that is so wildly effective and romantic and sweet and erotic. And it's what the hell? Wait, you know how to do it. Why are you not doing it? It's like, I don't want it. It's a movie about a pastor that turns into a velociraptor and eats criminals. Mm-hmm. So that's the movie I'm making. I could make a good movie, but I'm going to make this movie. And it is really, really enjoyable. It's it's 70 minutes long. It's about one Happy Halloween Scooby-Doo worth of time to watch. But I got a big kick out of it. I've seen it a few times now. I really dig it.
I would love for that to be the new measurement of time that becomes the official one, so that scientists doing Cosmos type TV shows will say billions of Happy Halloween Scooby-Doos ago our universe was created. Is Velocipastor the movie where a car explodes but they just wrote car explosion FX on the screen?
That's one. It's good stuff. A micro budget too. It was made for basic, I think, $80,000. I mean, it is, yeah, very impressive. The director, Brendan Steer, I think his name is, has gotten a large cash investment for his next film. So I'm, which apparently has some connection to Velocipastor. It's called Outback Dracula.
Okay. I should get on Velocipastor. So I'm called up for when Outback Dracula.
Yeah, watch Velocipastor, because he will probably show up in Outback Dracula, which, according to the press release, shifts the madness to 1880s Australia, where a psychic lesbian school teacher teams up with the world's greatest adventurer to find her missing girlfriend and defeat Dracula and his golden army of the undead. So do not miss this.
I mean, that is the plot of Quigley Down Under. Yeah. They're just ripping it off.
So before we do our quick closing stuff, Justin, do you have anything to plug? I know that you have a book about how to podcast coming out, and I know this because even...
When will this episode be out?
Saturday.
Well after Halloween.
Saturday, yeah. Even though I already have a podcast myself, I pre-ordered your book, and I'm looking forward to
Thank you.
Reading it.
You'll learn a few things. Saturday, November 21st, this is coming mm-hmm. out, you say. We're doing a live show tonight.
Oh.
If you go to live.themcelroy.family, that's M-C-E-L-R-O-Y, we're doing a live streamed show. You can get tickets for $10. Sawbones, my medical history podcast I do with my wife, Sydney, is going to be there, and it's going to be fun. And please go watch it, live.themcelroy.family. It's tonight.
Yeah, you guys are the best in the biz. Having seen you guys do live shows over the last couple of years, you guys have gotten like so tight and professional at it that it makes me wonder what we're even trying to do over here.
Yeah, I mean, I have tickets for the streaming show. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you so much. Even if you don't come, folks, I really can't emphasize that enough. Just please buy. Watch it or don't. It's up to you.
Well, anyway, before we go, I would like to say thank you to our network, Maximum Fun, that carries our show, The Flophouse, and a couple of shows by Justin and his extended family, a family full of podcasters, just like the Partridge Family, except for not singing. And
but the Partridge Family was full of podcasters. That's true.
And I'd like to thank Jordan Cowling for editing the show and making it sound better than it ever did when I produced it. And I'd like to thank our guest, Justin, for being here.
My pleasure.
And so for the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin, and continue to be.
And that's Justin McElroy.
I'm Justin McElroy. Do I say this is that's a weird thing to have a guest do? I'm Justin McElroy.
Yeah, you can give us the post-mortem afterwards about how we're doing.
Oh, okay. Charlene wants to say
that was
hi.
Weird. I'll do a now mortem. Hey, Charlene.
Okay, now that's now
am
that's
I not supposed to do. Now that was a weird thing for a guest to do. 100%.
Yeah, that's on Yay. That's on Justin. The first thing was on us, but that the second thing was on Justin.
You got your right, listeners can see that,
time.
Right?
Yeah, bye.
I've got a piece so bad. This is end of show. I'll end it. And this has been Flophouse. Keep reaching for the stars.
Okay, well, we'll let you go.
Bye.
Yeah, I'll do the intro and then we'll do the show.
Okay.
Good order. I'd head to the outro right after that, though. I don't want to tell you your business.
So many burns. Okay.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.